going a little woo-woo, the whole reason that we're here is for relationships.
Mm-hmm. True.
And so I think deepfake technology, not only is it a threat to like government, it's a threat to creativity, it's a threat to just being able to prove what's real and what's not. It mm-hmm. also is going to taint our ability to connect, because we're going to lose the ability to recognize what real human interaction and real human expression is like. Yeah. I think, I mean, that's an extreme, mm-hmm. but it's a real consequence.
I think it'd be a new market, you know. Yeah, prostitution's already sort of that market already, but
oh my gosh. I can't believe that we get from deepfake to sex work.
Welcome to episode 6 of Breaking It Down with DJ and Courtney.
Episode 6.
Yes, it's great. I'm so happy that you have become a listener and you're still listening to us. But we start each episode with a segment called What's Still Cooking? And it gives Courtney and me a chance to talk about things that we read or experienced or we saw that are still lingering on our minds and what's still cooking for me. Miami gone crazy. I've been seeing a bunch of viral videos on different blogs about the fights that happen out there. And I didn't even realize it. I heard about the curfew, but I didn't realize really what was going down. Mm-hmm. And when I finally started seeing the viral videos on Twitter and different other places, I went, wow, they were booked. Wow.
Wow, so
It was spring break. And spring break weekend in Miami. And it was a chaotic scene. And people were charged with disorderly conduct, vandalism, not listening to the police, and not wearing masks amidst a COVID pandemic.
I guess this is what the roaring 20s were like, huh?
Must have been, you know, along with some tequila, you know. And so a lot of people from out of town, tourists came to Miami Beach and South Beach. And because things were getting out of hand, the mayor enforced a 8 p.m. curfew. Right. This incited a riot.
I'm sure. That's crazy.
And a lot of cars were damaged. I saw one post that said it was a party there, and they had named the party Anything Goes.
Oh my God.
Bingos. so it was pretty wild. So they're going to have they don't have the curfew right now, but they may enforce it for this weekend as well.
Wow. That's crazy.
Anything goes.
I know someone who was down in Miami, and she's like, her trip had to, I don't think she ended it quickly, but she was ready to get back because of all of the chaos.
Oh, wow.
So yeah. Well, what's still cooking for me is the Postmaster General announced a 10-year plan to address the money problems that they have been having, the USPS has been having. Mm. So there's a 58-page plan titled Delivering for America. And the plan includes updating equipment, using energy-efficient vehicles, and slower delivery times. Mm. So Postmaster General Louis DeJoy is still not favored by many Democrats for his role in slowing down the mail service during last year's election and his financial support to former President Trump. The USPS has been hanging on for a thread for a while.
Yeah.
But
they have gotten nicer, though, I have to admit.
I think it depends on where you go. I had to go to the post office this morning, and I'm never going back to the branch that I went to. Not just because of the service, but also the patrons. But according to a CNN business video, the post office financial problems actually began in 2006 when George Bush was president and the Postal Accountability and Enhancement Act was passed. And so Congress required them to pre-fund retirement plans. Mm. The video, it's on CNN, so I don't know what to think about it, but there was something about it that felt that it was leaning to a certain way. I couldn't tell which way.
Okay.
But it was a very interesting, an interesting bit about what's been going on with the post office and why they're dealing with the problems that they're having right now.
Is it the competition with FedEx and UPS and all that?
Well, apparently, I mean, that's part of it, but it doesn't it doesn't get the things that it needs as a as the type of agency that it is. Like, they don't get to set the price of stamps. They don't get to set all of these things, but they also have a mandate to deliver to everyone. So it's like they don't have the things that they need, but then they seem to be doing, according to this video, they were doing fine until that act was passed. So that act, the video points to that act being the start of the problem, and okay. the agency has pretty much been hemorrhaging ever since then.
Well, yeah. You know, but government, you know, it works sometimes, and then sometimes it just don't. Okay, so this is topic one for our segment. We're going to do something a little called deep fake videos. I found an article on online, and it was talking about how we're in an age where where technology has gotten so advanced that it's hard to tell what's real and what's fake, right? I mean, just with cosmetic surgery. We're going to step further into something called deep fake videos, and which really means the digital manipulated fake videos. And for instance, there was this situation where in Pennsylvania, where a mother was charged with 3 counts of cyber harassment. And the reason why she was charged, because she had created a video, or had someone create a video, about these 3 cheerleaders that had them nude, also smoking and drinking. And she submitted this video to the cheerleaders, head cheerleaders, to possibly have them taken off the team, because her daughter was also on the team. It was like a rivalry going on. And ultimately, they found out that the videos were fake, and they had been deep faked in order to make it seem as though those girls were doing those things, when actually they never had. So that's how advanced technology has gotten. Yeah. Isn't that crazy?
Yeah, it's crazy. And the terminology, the deep fake, it comes through the deep technology. So pretty much, if a human were to do the making of that video, it would take a lot of work. It's pretty much AI studying the patterns of voice and face, and then manipulating the fake video of somebody else.
Right.
So, yeah. Exactly. So come a long way. And it's an R. Kelly situation. I do not call that progress.
No, and I don't really think it's progress. It's kind of scary, I have to admit. It's really scary. And instead of kind of scary, really scary. Mm-hmm. Because when I think about that entering into the political realm and how that could affect people who, you know, because that's what Trump did. You know, he created fake news and pushed a false narrative. And with articles and news stories, well, fake news always happens. This happens a lot on Fox News. But when you got the video, the receipt. You get the receipt now.
That's falsified, a falsified receipt.
Yeah, but how fast does that turn and people believe it and make decisions off of that and not fact checked it? And, you know, it like you said, it's setting us backwards, you know?
Yeah, I think it's, I agree with you. I think that it's not progress. I don't necessarily see how it adds value. And I think that it's a technology. Well, actually, you know, the Pentagon is already doing work to.
Oh, really?
I saw on CNN, on their website, they have an interactive webpage where they're showing you, where you get to decide, like, you can see if you can tell the difference between a deep fake. And they're talking about the things that the Pentagon is doing to try to combat this technology. So the Pentagon already knows that this is dangerous. And I get that, you know, there are people who want to use it for good. Like, I found an article where there's a software available now that you can use deepfakes to create training videos.
Okay.
And so, like, the appeal is that it's a lower cost. You can do it in multiple languages. But my thing is, how expensive is it how expensive is it to lose sight of all reality? You know, like, I feel like it's cheaper to pay another human being.
Yeah.
Than to use like subtitles or dubbing than to invest in technology that can pretty much have us lose track of everything that is real and true, you know?
Mm-hmm. But I could see how I could save money, though, instead of having an actor try to remember lines and trying to, you know, do different, because we did that script, and I'm horrible at reading scripts, you know, and trying to remember lines.
But there are trained people who are better than you, DJ, and they deserve to be mm-hmm. paid, and they can do the work. And when they do the work, you know, so like, I think that there's another consequence that we also aren't thinking about. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, we're already in this digital space. You know, we've been through we're still in the pandemic, and right. we have less human interaction. It's important that we have human interaction. It's important that we're able to learn and be around humans and see how they interact. And the more we develop this technology that takes that away from us, I think that's going to impact the way that we are even able to connect. And we actually aren't even really good at that already.
No, we're not.
You know? So it's like to create another barrier. I think the whole, going a little woo-woo, the whole reason that we're here is for relationships.
Mm-hmm, true.
And so I think deepfake technology, not only is it a threat to like government, it's a threat to creativity, it's a threat to just being able to prove what's real and what's not. It mm-hmm. also is going to taint our ability to connect, because we're going to lose the ability to recognize what real human interaction and real human expression is like. Yeah. I think, I mean, that's an extreme, mm-hmm. but it's a real consequence.
I think it'd be a new market, you know. Yeah, you well, prostitution's already sort of that market already, but
oh my God. I can't believe that we get from deepfake to sex work. But okay,
my mind just goes all over the place. So, how do you think the laws can you think? Do you think that the laws that we can create that can potentially help with reducing people wanting to do something like this and get away with it, or thinking they can get away with it?
There's so many laws that would have to be enacted because there's so many ways that this can be used harmfully. Like I saw that last year there was Live Nation, Jay-Z's mm-hmm. Media company, or the company that I think Roc Nation is his media company, the parent company, Live Nation, sued a creator who had made a deepfake using Jay-Z's voice. And the ruling was copyright infringement. So it wasn't even about defamation. So like you say, there's so many areas where this technology can violate things mm-hmm. that there's so many, I don't even know how you would regulate that.
Yeah, like fake news, you know, obviously blackmail. Again, you said defamation. So, you know, and this technology is nothing new. It's been used plenty of times in Hollywood. It's been used mm-hmm. in movies, Carrie Fisher, the movie, I think it was Star Wars, where she had died during the production of the movie. And so they had to, deep fake her image in some scenes in order to complete the story. Mm-hmm. So it started in Hollywood. And now, because the technology is moving so fast, that now everybody is going to, the article that I read, it said that everyone will begin to have access to this technology, and it's getting more advanced and advanced as every year. And the guy who's an expert in making sure that, trying to check and see which videos are real or not, because, you know, mm-hmm. this is going to be a court issue as well. He said that he will ultimately lose this battle because mm-hmm. he said the technology is growing so quickly.
Yeah. Yeah. And I mean, like, to think that that could be your profession, to determine whether a video of a person is real or not. That's mm-hmm. crazy. And I mean, I just think, you know, I think that we get to determine really what progress is. We like to talk about being in this technological age, but are we really advancing? You know, I recognize that it's used a lot in Hollywood. And for the visual impact that it makes, you know, like, I didn't think about it in that way, but like, there's a scene in Forrest Gump where there's a deepfake, because clearly Forrest Gump wasn't with JFK in the White House, right? You know, so they're like, they sort of deepfake that scene. Mm-hmm. But how would it be if they just had an actor play JFK, you know, like a lookalike, mm-hmm. you know, like, does it really take away from the experience? I don't understand. Like, are we that crippled in our imagination that we have to make a technology that, yes, it's cool, but it's also very dangerous. You know, like, are don't do we do we not have the means to use that creativity to do something different that it, you know, like, I just.
Well, I can say I love technology, and even with all its problems, with kids, on constantly on their smartphones, and people are already talking about how this technology is sort of kind of causing people to be more introverts and not having social skills. But
We're gonna be the Handmaid's Tale before it's all over.
I would say one of those quotes in that movie, in that show, which I think is so funny. But I can't remember the quote right now, where they actually talk to each other. But all in all, I think technology is great. It has its problems, and of course, with every time there's a win, there's a lose, there's a pro, there's a con. And yes, as this technology gets more where everyone it gets more mass, where pe more people can get their hands on it, and it gets more advanced, it's going to become a problem. But and as you were saying, how is this a good thing, in terms of what we're losing in the process? But we have really great training videos.
And it's just like, I don't know. I feel like there are people that, I mean, clearly we have a lot that we need to change as a people, but like, I think the thing about this in particular is that it's dangerous in a way that it can create consequences that we cannot come back from.
Yeah,
Like
you're right.
I can't pinpoint it, but I want to believe either it was a hypothetical or it actually happened. And because it's technology, because this is technology, and it can't be contained in a certain way, that means it's accessed globally. And there was either a hypothetical or something where it actually happened, where a dictator was videotaped, or there was a video of a dictator making a speech or something or whatever. And for some way, it had a negative impact at a very,
Pivotal.
whatever, right, at a catastrophic level. And he could claim it was a deep fake. So like, accountability could be taken away. But then, like, if you think about if that could happen or if that did happen, what happens if a dictator's ego is bruised by a deep fake? And that dictator then, uses his or her nuclear codes, and acts out on that, So it's like, we can't come back from that, Like, there's certain damage that can't be repaired. And I think this technology leads to that. Even on the everyday, even if it's not even a dictator, those cheerleaders that you mentioned, that's a stain on their reputation. And it didn't even happen.
I see that it's going to be a problem. That's just the truth. But is it going to stop? We're going to see a minimization of it, or once everyone has access to that, it's going to be a problem. But I don't think you can put any laws in effect that's going to subside this technology growing.
Well, we got to wrap up. So my breakdown is the technology's here now.
I'm right.
So I think it's something that needs to be on the docket for all governing bodies, because it's something that definitely needs to be regulated. I think that like, the more that we see the technology, the more that we're going to have case law to hopefully regulate it. Because we've already got the cheerleader incident, we've got the Jay-Z incident, so there is a precedent set that the technology can be used to infringe on rights, to defame, and I hope it doesn't get to the point where something catastrophic happens before we take it seriously. But I really hope and think that we all need to be aware of this. And I think to sum it up, we need to spend more time with each other so that we can tell the difference between what's real and what's fake.
What's fake? Yeah, I totally agree with what you're saying. And the bigger conversation for me is, how we have this ability to create these great technology pieces, but our consciousness hasn't increased along with our ability to create technology. So this is a segment on Make You Laugh. We do this segment every episode. And the thing that I found that I thought was hilarious is this is a guy who's a relationship guru. His name is Derek Jackson. He spells his, instead of Jackson, like the way we normally spell Jackson, is J-A-X-N. But he's a YouTube sensation, and he preaches about healthy relationships, especially he seems to be more, his audience seems to be more women. With books titled Single Mothers Are for Grown Men Only and I Still Deserve It, Affirmations for Women Who Refuse to Give Up on Love.
Wait, hold on. What's the title?
The first book is Single Mothers Are for Grown Men Only. That's the first book that I found. Oh. The second book that I found is I Still Deserve It, Affirmations for Women Who Refuse to Give Up on Love. So there's a couple of books out there that he, so his thing is about relationships in terms of women. You liking it?
No.
So
I'm not liking it.
No, but the way I found out about him originally, a friend of mine, she forwarded me a YouTube video of him because she was listening to his rhetoric and she was going through some marital problems as well. So she found comfort in what he was saying. And I'm saying, okay, all right. Well, if it works, it works for you. Mm-hmm. But it didn't surprise me this week when I heard the story that he got Dunk of the Day from, was it Charlemagne?
Charlemagne the God.
Charlemagne the God. Made him Dunkie from the Breakfast Club. Yeah. I got Dunk of the Day because he's been cheating on his wife. So he had an affair, and from his own words, he said that he has had numerous affairs. But this one lady came out to Candace and to Daily Mail, and she gave the specifics about their relationship in 2020. And he says that his wife
during the pandemic.
They were getting busy during the pandemic. My God. Okay. All right. So his wife found out, and he says that he left her, she came back, and he's told her everything about what he's done. In the video, she's standing beside him looking hella crazy. I don't know why these wives stick by these men, but, you know. But all in all, the thing that's crazy about it is this. The whole time this was going on, even though his wife may know about it now, he was giving relationship advice to women. And he's doing the exact thing that he's beating men down for. Mm-hmm. You know, so a lot of men out here, like,
he knew what it looked like because he was doing it.
There you go. And I love that quote, we teach what we most need to learn.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And you know, so it's really,
and
it's
apparently
really crazy.
You know, like, I didn't know about him at all. I don't listen to all of those heteronormative, like, relationship things, you know, like that. I don't I don't really subscribe. I don't consume those things. So I didn't know who he was. But when this came out, he, along with other people like him, other black men like him that are giving relationship advice, there's another black man. I think he was more bashing black women in a certain way. They seem to be very cocky and arrogant. And I think this example just reminds me that you always want to remain humble or the universe will humiliate you.
Right. I like how you said the universe will humiliate you. I mean, I believe that whatever you talk, the universe has to bring you up to that, even if it reveals, you know, your BS. So I do life coach. I'm a life coach. But I still remember that don't teach what you have not perfected, what you haven't mastered, you know, because you will be brought out or you will be exposed as a, you know, hypocrite.
Really? Well, here's the thing. I think you can teach what you're still learning, but you don't teach in a way that's condemning others. You know, like his thing was that he put himself on a pedestal, you know, even in his even in the video with his wife, he alludes to the fact that he might have done that. And he apologizes if people put him on a pedestal and if he gave them reason to. Are you serious? Are you kidding me? I haven't even listened to your videos and I can already tell that you put yourself on a pedestal.
Yeah, it's sad, but That's the state of, I think that I just, it makes me angry when I see that because it really shows how, it's like another strike against men, to say you guys are just narcissistic, what is your problem? That's the problem that I have with it. And that's why I dismiss him because, and I'll, don't ever send me a video by, Derek Jackson.
Well, bless their marriage.
Yes, but she's like looking hella scared and hella crazy in that video. So,
I've seen quite a few memes about that. Yeah.
me too.
Okay. Okay, let's move into our next topic, the next section. And it is about the city of Evanston, Illinois. They are the first city in the United States to offer Black residents reparations.
Oh.
So the city council voted 8-1 to begin making good on its pledge to distribute $10 million over the next 10 years, with the distribution of $400,000 to eligible Black households. Each qualifying household would receive $25,000 for home repairs, down payments on property, and interest or late penalties on properties in the city.
Okay, well, I like the idea of reparations, but I don't know if that's going to fix the situation in terms of reparations. But
So, go ahead, continue.
so how do you determine who gets the reparations?
That's a question that a lot of people who are against reparations have to ask. I think it's a valid question to a degree. But I mean, in this case, they have a plan. So qualifying residents must either have lived in or been a direct descendant of a Black person who lived in Evanston between 1919 to 1969, or that person's direct descendant who suffered discrimination in housing because of city ordinances, policies, or practices. Also, residents who also experienced discrimination due to city's policies or practices after 1969 can qualify. So they've identified, and this case, it's very specific. It's about housing. So it's very clear that in Evanston, there have been discriminatory housing practices, and they are providing reparations for that. Right.
So do you think that's going to sort of level the playing field?
I don't know much about Evanston. I have been, when I first heard about the article, I heard about I heard about this movement or the planning for it before the vote happened. And when I heard what the reparations were, I was like, that doesn't seem complete. Because first of all, but that was that I would say that that's a short-sighted judgment because I don't know the history of the housing discrimination in Evanston. I don't know what their budget is. I don't know how much $25,000 can do. But my first thought was, okay, so you give me $25,000 so I can improve my house, and then I go get it appraised, and it's undercut by a racist appraiser, So I'm like, that doesn't seem to fully address the issue. But I think, I think after looking at some other things, there's a really great interview on PBS with, who is it with? It is with Dr. Ron Daniels, who's a national, he's a member of the National African American Reparations Committee.
Oh, wow, there's a
Commission,
reparations
yes.
committee.
Oh, the
Okay.
commission, yeah. There's been a commission
Commission.
for a while. And so he said that, because it wasn't a unanimous vote. There was someone who opposed. And the reason that it was Alderman, no, it was, who was it that opposed? It was, I'm sorry, Cicely Fleming. Alderman Cicely Fleming opposed because she felt that the people who are owed the reparations should be able to decide how the reparations are given. And he said in this interview, well, they put in the work to find out what residents wanted and that they wanted support with housing. So I mean, like, in that regard, there's a lot of good things about this, and there's a lot of things that feel like, okay, I just don't want this to be the blueprint across the board because it's not going to fix everything. It's
Right,
not.
like a band-aid,
Right. Well,
a very
yeah.
bad band-aid.
Yeah, so I think the thing of reparations, it's very complex in a way, but it's also very simple. Like I think that there is a strong case because of more morality almost. Like there's a moral debt that's owed. And there are systems that still exist to keep those that were disenfranchised, disenfranchised, so we need to make amends for that.
So what do you think? So in terms of a proper reparations package, what do you think is the ultimate goal of when you we think about reparations in its true sense? What do you think is the ultimate goal of that?
I'm gonna do something that I hate when people do. I don't know the answer of how to give reparations to African Americans. I don't know how it should be done. However, I think the goal is to level the playing field. Okay, and if you think about what reparations are, it's to repair, it's to right a wrong.
Yeah,
So
right.
there
Yeah, in
was
the
a
word repar.
right,
Okay, I like that.
repair, right?
Reparation.
So there was
I just got that.
you're crazy. So there was a wrong that was done to Africans that were brought to this country, that were forced to work without pay, that lost many lost their lives. And then when that system was over, they were denied an equal opportunity to catch up,
I didn't get my 40 acres in a meal.
Right. And so like that's the other thing to think about. Like when we think about what's happening in Evanston, that's at a local level. The 40 acres and the mule was promised at a national level. And so thinking about how reparations done on local levels or national levels needs to be taken into consideration. So, but I think what's important to think about when we think about reparations is if you're supposed to be righting a wrong, it's pretty much making a tangible apology. Have to acknowledge what the wrong was, right? So the wrong was not just slavery. It was also what happened after slavery. It was also like Jim Crow laws. It was housing discrimination. It was all of those things that put Black people at a disadvantage. And if you don't know all of those things, how can you actually repair them and then make sure that they don't happen anymore? A true apology is when you change behavior. And so that means that it's got to be more than just money. It's got to be more than just access to certain things. There are other things that have to change if it's going to be a true reparation.
Right. Because I like the access to things. I think having a seat at the table is really important to me. If someone was to give me a reparations package, it would include, when I was trying to get into college, that it wouldn't have been such a difficult process for me. And it was just difficult. I knew that I was at a disadvantage. I knew that I would not get into the college that I wanted to get into because I was an African American male and I wasn't going to get the same information, access, told the same things that my white counterparts were being told and long before. So you feel it. You feel that you're coming in unprepared, ill prepared.
So yeah, I would say that those things are important. And I think there's been a lot of work and a lot of talk about reparations. And I think a lot of it is good. A lot of it is good. But when it comes to issuing them, it's important that they are complete. Because what happens is after reparations are made, there is no, if it doesn't address the injustices that it caused, and if it doesn't, what's the word I'm thinking of? Interrupt the systems that perpetuate those disparities, then there's no recourse after the reparations are done. You know? Because it's almost like case closed.
It will be. It will
Right?
be. It will
So
be.
that's
Why are
why
you
it's
arguing about
really
it now? Why are you saying,
absolutely, absolutely. And we already know, like I was just listening to a talk that Ta-Nehisi Coates did at the University of Chicago. I don't let me be lying about what school it was. It was a school in Chicago.
Okay.
And it was after he wrote that Atlantic article about the case for reparations that apparently was like the most read Atlantic article ever in
Oh,
time.
wow.
What he was saying was that there has been a strategy because the case for reparations started back then, you know? So there's been this thing where some people have received some form of reparations. There have been like enslaved people that became free that received some form of reparation. And then there are others who were told, well, we don't know how to give it. And so they try to wait for a generation to go by so they can be like, well, why didn't you ask for it then? There's nothing we can do about it now. So it's like, if we already have evidence that that has happened then we need to make sure that if reparations happen, that it's complete and that it really makes the difference that we're looking for. Because if not, it's clear that a system that is built to benefit a people, they're going to want to keep it that way. And so if they can get over it, they will.
Yeah, I agree with that. So, how a thing that I try to ask myself is how does America look after reparations
Reparations.
have been given? You know, how does America look after that? And it's just hard for me to imagine. It's just
It is,
hard for me
yeah.
to.
It's hard for me too because it's not an America that we know. It's not an America that's ever existed. And I think I have some very controversial views on what a true reparations package would look like.
Oh,
And
let's
it's
hear them.
I'll just say that I don't necessarily know if it includes integration in a certain way.
You said it includes what again?
I don't necessarily think it will include integration in a certain way.
Integration.
Yeah.
Okay.
So that's a very high level view. But I don't know. And I think that having the option and having the opportunity to vision what America, like, could America actually look like what it looks like on paper in terms of like our documents, our founding documents? Could it actually do that? Because it never has.
No. This exercise, or what they call this exercise in democracy, us living up, you know, a Black America holding white America up to the values and standards that they wrote years ago is what we've always been doing, right? And what I did want to get the conversation to before we end this conversation was about the class. I wouldn't say a class war, but they're just African Americans that need reparations. They just need it. It will help their lives so much on any kind of level. And because the classes are happening where you have middle class African Americans, experience is very different from a lower class impoverished African American family. And I don't think sometimes that's being acknowledged and looked at clearly.
That's interesting. That's I would agree with you. I think class is something. But I was just listening to Ta-Nehisi Coates talk about how when he was in college and thinking about this reparations conversation, it was where, you know, when you get to college and they pretty much just complicate things that don't need to be complicated. But you know, he even brought that up. Like, is class something we need to consider? Is gender something we need to consider? All of these things, are they need something that we need to consider? I would say yes. I mean, pretty much the thing is, reparations is it has to be a nuanced issue. It's not something that's going to be a one size fits all. It can't be. So yeah, I definitely think that's something that needs to happen. But the other thing, again, even if we were to look at it at a less nuanced version, from a less nuanced lens, and we look at like lower class Black people who need support, do they have the systems that will support them, even if they got like even if it was like financial support or education access? Are the other systems available to help them move out of that class?
I totally agree. That's the question I ask myself, is that when you give someone something without the education and knowledge and access to that, does it truly benefit them?
Right. So let's wrap up the segment. What's your breakdown?
My breakdown is I'm glad that someone did something, you know, instead of being ignored. So maybe this conversation about, you know, what Evanston is doing, maybe that will open up a conversation where other people begin to start having a deeper conversation about how can they support African-American individuals who are impoverished and who need that assistance and helping them on some kind of level. And framing it as reparations.
Yeah. Okay. I like that. I would agree with that. I would say, like, I've definitely expanded my view on the Evanston situation since I first heard it. So congratulations to them. I would caution. I think they're a cautionary tale, though. I think it's progress, but it is not that anything is, but it's not perfection.
No,
so I would caution against it being a blueprint model. There are certain things that should be in the blueprint that they did, but not everything. And I think if it's true, the work that they did to make sure that they were addressing the needs that those residents said that they needed and that they're doing the most that they can to help them, then that's great. Those are certain things that we want to see moving forward. But I think we just need to continue thinking and continue speaking about what reparations are really repairing.
Yeah, it needs to be talked about in a positive way instead of it being a controversial issue.
Yeah. Well, let's move into our Inspire segment. And even though I had that crazy experience at the post office this morning, USPS is still inspiring me. So there is a mail carrier, Adam Finley, who started playing tic-tac-toe with some of the kids on his route to inspire joy. During the pandemic, when he was going, you know, the kids would be home from school, they weren't with their friends. So with the permission of the parents, he started bringing out tic-tac-toe games on his index cards, and he would play with them and they would go on for weeks. And, you know, he said he would let some of the kids win so that he would be able to honor them with a treat. But the kids really loved it. And I thought that was so creative. It's a low tech, really creative and fun idea to bring some joy to the neighborhood. So congrats and salute to you, Adam Finley.
Yeah. Anytime USPS does good, we need to acknowledge that.
Yeah. I thought that was really cute. It made me smile when I read it. I think I'm becoming more sentimental these days, but
it happens, you know. The compassion chip starts getting activated as we get events and age.
Excuse me, I don't think it has anything to do with my age.
No, I said as we started advancing in age, you know, as we started getting more older, we started getting more some people start getting more compassionate as they get older in age, you know, not everybody.
This is the second time today that you tried to call me old. So
no, I have not. Old. I've been giving you compliments and you've been interpreting.
They've been backhanded compliments.
No. Your makeup is flawless. Your eyes are shining. You're getting more compassionate. I mean, what can I say?
Keeping it up for the people.
Oh, that's great. You know.
So, do you have any last words? We've got a little bit more time.
I did want to talk about one story. And I know we're not in the what's still cooking, but there's a few things still cooking that we have a few moments that I wanted to talk about. There was an idiot that was at the zoo, and he wanted his child to get closer to the elephants.
Oh, no.
Okay. And so he actually climbed two or three fences to get into to the area where the elephant was actually at.
Do you know where this was? Where was this?
This was off the top of my head. I can't remember off the top of my head which location it was. I have it in my notes.
The United States?
It was in the United States, yes.
Oh, my God.
I can't remember off the top of my head what state
it was.
But there's video out there of it. You just put in elephant, man, child, crazy people. And so the elephant comes charging at them. So the man picks up his 2-year-old little girl and began running for the fence to get out of the way of the elephant. He drops the child as he tries to get out the way. So he comes back, pick the child up, and they get out of the area before the elephant actually, does any harm. So everybody is watching this just in shock. I mean, you hear all the people screaming and hollering because they think, the elephant is going to kill, them both. So he was arrested and charged with child
Child neglect.
cruelty.
Yeah, exactly. I was just thinking about child abuse. I remember when I was in Ghana, we went to the Mole game park, and we were in two groups. My group, we went on a hike, and the other group, one of my friends, I actually was talking to her earlier today. Her group was the one that encountered elephants, and they had to run. They had to run. We
So they
just
was just
my
out
group
and about.
well I mean we were yeah they were just out and about. It's the game park, so it's like, all my group saw was antelope, so it wasn't really exciting. But they were out, we had a guide, but they had a guide, and like apparently they were like, elephant, run. And I think about No Reservations, the show, Anthony Bourdain's show No Reservations. When he went to Ghana, he also went to Mole game park. And he and his idiot cameraman got up early one morning without their guides, and they were like filming. And the guides woke up and they're like, "What are you doing? There's elephants. That's like they could kill you." Like, I don't understand the audacity of man.
The audacity, especially you have they have a baby elephant. You don't even see the elephant, but if they sense that you're going to come near that baby elephant, they're going to kill you.
Elephants are nothing to play with.
So that's what's great. People really they don't really get it. I guess that quote that I said earlier about anything goes.
Get off my back.
But I bet that part's gonna be live with the hint, because I mean obviously they're gonna have Hennessy, so anything goes. I'm gonna start using that quote, like to good people. Anything goes.
Oh my goodness. All right. Well, we have made it to the end of another episode. If you are still listening, we thank you. It would be really great if someone would send us a DM on Instagram with their ideas. If you have an idea for the show or something that you want us to know, we might even read your comment on the show. So reach out to us. We are on Instagram at Breaking It Down Show. We are also on Facebook at Breaking It Down Podcast. And they can email us too, DJ, right?
Yes, at breaking it down show at gmail.com. Breaking it down show at gmail.com.
Great.
So, we'll make you famous.
Wait, how are we gonna do that? We're not even famous.
Just a thought.
Well, thank you,
You're
DJ.
welcome.
Thanks for listening, everyone. See you next week.
See you next week. Thank you for listening.
Please subscribe to this podcast on your favorite podcast platform and leave us a review.